empowerment, pick good people, and allow people to pick their own teams, and then charge them to take risk. And as a leader, accept that risk and move forward with them. Not in, you know, not in front of them, move forward with them. That's one of the first things I do. The second thing I do is look to constantly stretch people beyond their current bounds. I use a concept over here that I call strike teaming. I will come in, I will bring together a group of people and say, you know, I'm not sure how we want to handle this. You tell me collectively what your view is. And then I will let them basically do the analysis, prepare a decision, and then we will debate that decision so that they understand the pressure that I'm under, what's influencing me, and at the same time, I get their unbiased view. Generally speaking, people walk away from that saying, okay, I now understand more about what is in the decision process than I did before, and I have a direct line of sight as to how that decision was influenced by factors beyond those of my own boss. And that makes them feel more secure in the fact that they are part of a team and that they are in control of the destiny of their own discipline.
Gives them a real sense of inclusion.
You're right. The third piece of it is to stretch them when they're an expert and have them teach. So one of the things we're doing here in Energy is we have programs where executives are called upon to teach because the Energy Department has a lot of very important missions, but one of the things about it is we have a lot of subject matter experts here. Who better to teach than those experts? And when you do put them in a position of teaching and you give them the tools as to how to teach, which is one of the things that HR does here, is we provide the curriculum guidance and the actual instructional techniques to help them communicate their technical or their discipline knowledge. They are able to then establish relationships wider than their own office and with employees all the way throughout the process. What that does is establishing not just a learning-based culture, but it's setting up a mentor-based environment within the department.
It really sounds then like communication is at the foundation of all three of those motivational techniques that you just laid out for me. Do you think that a lack of communication may be one of the ways in which other leaders or people in management positions might fail when it comes to motivating their employees?
Absolutely, and the Energy Department is a prime example of that. If you go to our employee viewpoint surveys and you look at those, you will see that that's one of the areas that we struggle in. Why do we struggle in that? Well, within the Energy Department, you have national security programs, which include nuclear weapons activities. You have environmental concerns and issues, which obviously come into conflict when you're handling materials like we do. You have cutting edge renewable energy and conventional energy programs that compete for budget space and priority. All of those in a competition limit communication, right? We all hear what we want to hear. We have our priority view. That's what America is all about. You know, different points of view and different priorities. You have to bring that into focus. When you do that, you automatically have disconnects and you have communication pathways that can break down. And they break down between how does the decision get made and do employees have a clear line of sight? I started with a little comment on line of sight. And do they understand? Do they understand the influences? We struggle with that here, and we're focused on how we improve that because it is such a difficult area. But it definitely affects employee morale. I'm not engaged. I don't know what's happening. I don't understand where decisions are being made. You've got to tackle that because that in a constrained budget environment, people need to know. They need to know what resources they're going to have and what they're not going to have so that they can accept that and figure out what the alternatives are.
What techniques are you then using at NRG to help solve those issues?
We're using several techniques. One, we just recently created an associate deputy secretary over here who is focused entirely on operations. We have chief operating officers in all of the major undersecretary structures, and that associate deputy secretary coordinates all the activity across what I'll call the mission support activities, HR, budget, CIO, and the program lines, so that whenever we're making a decision about resource levels or program priorities, everybody from a mission perspective understands this is what we put the priority on, this is what needs to be done, and we all know exactly what we need to do to line up behind that. And more importantly, we know exactly where the weaknesses are. We know where we don't have enough money. We know where we don't have enough people. And we can all focus on how to solve that problem.
As a man,
I won't say it's foolproof.
But as long as you're working on it, right? That's what,
right.
At least recognizing the problem and then starting to fix it is, I think, you know, the first thing you have to do. As a manager, how do you keep yourself motivated in, you know, what are tough budget times or when your employees themselves may be unmotivated for various reasons, whatever they may be? So how does that affect you as a manager? And then what do you do that may be the same or different than the advice you would give to federal managers who are trying to motivate their employees?
Well, I think one of the things that works for me, at least me personally, is I get out of my office and I go walk around the building. And I'll walk into an area where I know there's program activity going on, and whether it's good program activity or bad program activity. And I'll say, you know, what are you guys working here? How are you working? And I will engage them in a discussion. And what I find is when I get down in those programs about people who are connected to that mission, that improves my morale because I start looking at the things they're doing, and that reminds me why I'm here and what awesome abilities there are in the federal government, what awesome things that they're doing on behalf of people, but more importantly, what my responsibility is. It clarifies back for me what I'm responsible for and what I need to deliver. And I say, okay, you know, get back in the game, step back up here. That works for me personally. I think with individuals, one of the things that we do here is we do a lot of communication about what's working well and what's not working well. And I don't do not working well to say, you know, we got a problem here and we need to get on it and fix it. But you know what? Every day we come in, we get smarter and we get better. So it's about celebrating mistakes. It's about saying, hey, we discovered something here we're not doing well, and you know, we're on it, and let me tell you what a great thing we're doing to correct this. That translates to employees, and you have faith in me. You have value in you. You recognize the fact that I am trying to make this a better process, a better world.
Mm-hmm. What motivational techniques have you maybe personally tried or you've seen other federal managers try that really don't work? Maybe there are things that people think would work, but that just really don't, or things that just genuinely don't work?
I've tried a couple that I've had real failures with, and I'm not embarrassed to say them. I've tried coming in and taking direct charge and saying, we're going to turn this on its head and we're going to turn it around overnight. You know what? My overnight and somebody else's generally never match up. And I found myself saying, hey, I fixed it in the short term. I bullied it into solution, but I didn't solve the overall problem. I didn't build a better tomorrow. I just put a Band-Aid on something. So I've learned, resist the temptation to say, I've got the total solution. Often you don't. It's much more complex, and it involves people.
And people can see through that probably, too.
Sure can. And they know that what you're doing is putting a Band-Aid on it. So if you have to do that, say, let's Band-Aid this and then come back to it. But don't make the mistake of saying, I know exactly how to fix it. Most of the problems we have involve people and as part of the total system. And you have to look at the fact that those experts, those individuals involved, they know more about the climate, more about the culture, more about what's happening often than you do. Even if you've had that problem in another agency, it might not fit where you are today. It might be a good idea and a good place to start, but it may not be the total solution.
In a recent survey that we conducted here at Federal News Radio, federal managers and employees both told us that their morale is down due to things like tighter budgets, the pay freeze, Fed bashing, either from Congress or from the public at large. Are you hearing the same thing from your employees or from employees at other agencies, and what do they tell you are the reasons for their low morale if you are hearing those things?
I do hear that morale is affected, and I think it's affected in several ways. The first is people are hearing what gets said about them outside Washington, 60 miles outside the Beltway. Washington's broken. If you work here and you've dedicated your life to public service, you can't help but hear that it's you when somebody says Washington's broken. Okay? So we need to get away from Washington's broken to what's not working right in our government. And I think that's one thing, and that's what I do here. I try to change people's view to, let's talk about what they mean, what's not working right. It's not you, it's not all federal employees. So that's one piece I do here. I think another piece that is frustrating a lot of people is they're looking at the fact that they constantly see efficiency measures that are being put in place. You know, cut this piece back, cut that back, cut this piece. They've been doing that. That's been happening for several years now, and they're saying, okay, when I cut it back and I recognize that it's been cut too far, or in order to fix something, I need to put an initiative in place and get it funded. When they can't step back up and say, we've cut this, but now in order to really get this to work, we need to do this and get that recognized and funded, that's what's contributing, I think, to most managerial low morale. They can't get focus on saying, we've done it, but now in order to perform better, we need to do this.
Yeah, we may see more of that as, you know, 2013 budgets are, as we all know, going to be tighter than budgets of the past.
That's right. And what you're going to see is caps go on in certain areas and the desire to drive things down, and we may get directed cuts that come through the budget process. I think if there's rationale behind it, people stand up to it when they just say, well, you hit me and I don't understand why. That's tough for us to explain.
So what do you say to those employees who inevitably are going to be probably expected to do more with less in this coming year?
Well, one thing we can do is sit down and say, okay, look, the budget is going to be relatively flat, and we are going to have to prioritize where we're going to invest. You know, don't talk about where you're going to cut. Talk about where you're going to invest and get them involved in the process. Say, all right, here's the budget we're facing. Here's the situation. Let's, as a broad team, come together and talk about, you know, where there are adjustments possible and whether those adjustments are long-term or whether you believe, hey, short-term we can do this, but then we need to come back, just as I said before, and address what the real solution to this is. You know, don't be afraid to address things short-term, knowing that you have to build a better tomorrow, and then as a team be committed to that. People will, if they're given an involvement, say, yes, I can do more with less. Here's what I can do, as opposed to I've looked at your budget and made a decision that this is the best place to make the mark. That's not a team-oriented behavior. That's not a family-oriented behavior. It's saying I've made a decision about what you're doing, and that speaks to their value. That drives morale.
And goes back to what you said earlier about keeping them involved and keeping the lines of communication open.
Right.
I'm also wondering, you know, in light of the way that federal employees have been portrayed in the media in the past year or so, you know, we hear the stories about federal pay and how it compares to the private sector. And, you know, just this week saw a story about, you know, the number of federal employees who haven't paid their taxes. How does that affect recruitment numbers and, you know, how federal managers can recruit and encourage people that the federal government is still a great place to work?
Well, I will tell you right now, when I'm out there talking to people, what I'm hearing among the students that I talk to in a large measure is, you know, they want to come join the federal government. They see the value in public service. They look at the fact that, you know, there's a pay progression ability within the government. You can get promoted. You can move through it. I'm not seeing where I'm losing people directly. I will tell you that one of the things I think that does impact when you're recruiting early on is we don't have clear pathways right now, no pun intended. Pathways is a program we need to get in place, because to hire these new college graduates, they need to know how to get in, and right now that's a murky world for them. So I have great expectations and great demand for pathways. I'm looking for that to help me. In some areas, in specialty areas, nuclear engineering, for example, we do need special pay policies to help us along the way, because we are competing with the private sector. And we have accepted service programs that do that. We have the ability to use special pay authorities. That works for us. Some cases that doesn't work, and it's generally in some very advanced, very specific scientific areas where we do have a difficulty bringing people in, and pay does become an issue. But right now, when I talk to those people that I'm targeting, the new college graduates who are the future of the civil service, you know, they understand the value of public service. I think they have a robust understanding of the pay environments that are out there, and I'm seeing good return on trying to get them in.
Finally, as we wrap up, just anything else that you would want to say or have federal employees know from someone like yourself who's in a management role to these employees who are really feeling unmotivated right now due to some of the things we talked about earlier, like the pay freeze and budgets and things like that?
Well, one thing I would obviously say to them is remember why you got into this in the first place. You got into federal service because it is a career of substance. It is a career of meaning, and you are making the difference in the lives of hundreds of millions of people with the things that you do. And if you doubt any day that you were important, just take a look at the accomplishments of your agency or your office. Take pride in that work that you do. The second thing I would say to them is, you know, when people talk about pay freezes and what's going on, go online and look at the private sector and look at the rate of turnover in private sector jobs and think about the amount of training, the amount of exposure that you get, the things you were involved in, and whether or not being part of something where you come in and work for a little while and then move to the next contract job or to the next industry position, or whether you're committed to what you're doing within a federal office or within the government as a whole, isn't that a balancing act that you see as valuable? I think the answer to that for most people is yes. I can move from one agency to another. I can get involved in serious missions. The pay may not be as risk-based as it is in the private sector, but there's recognition here. There's the ability to earn a fair and good salary and progress and to be rewarded.